Hello, Live Christianly listeners. Welcome to episode 4. Today we have a very special episode of the Live Christianly podcast for you. I'm going to begin now by quoting the philosopher, theologian, science fiction writer, C.S. Lewis. And he writes this: "Try to exclude the possibility of suffering, which the order of nature and the existence of free wills involve, and you find that you have excluded life itself." That's a quote from C.S. Lewis from his book, The Problem of Pain. The existence of suffering in a world created by a God we call good and almighty, aka the problem of pain, it's a fundamental theological dilemma that many people face. It's a serious and understandable objection to the Christian religion, and definitely one that begs an answer from our faith. Recently, Elijah had the opportunity at a youth conference to share with a number of the attending students some of his thoughts and studies on the matter, and offer some insight and explanation as to how we can approach a question like this. So, for episode 4 of the Live Christianly podcast, without further ado, let's join him now in the classroom.
So, while everyone's getting settled in, I want to introduce myself. I am Elijah. I am a youth leader at Grace Baptist Church in Tonawanda. Do I have anybody who is in here from there? I don't think so.
I know people from there.
Do you know people from there? I know people from there, too. I actually don't. Yeah, wow, okay. Nobody here? Nobody's here from it. That means that there's a bunch of my kids that are skipping out on my class. Who do they think they are? I put my Twitter handle down here because I like Twitter a lot. And if you are on Twitter, this is probably a really super easy way to get in contact with me because I'm on it a lot. And if you have questions or something like that on this topic, feel free to tweet at me, because I know there's a lot of speakers that I would be like, I just want to ask you a dang question. There's too many people asking questions and the time was over and things like that. So feel free.
I'm coming in again.
You're coming in again? All right. There's so many other classes. You want this one twice?
Oh, yeah.
This is how good this one is, guys. This is how good it is. Okay, so who am I? I already introduced myself, but as far as who am I relative to this topic, for me, I haven't really suffered all that much. I bet you it's the same for you guys. I mean, we're all young. I'm younger than not any of you. I've had a couple of things happen to me, but like, you know, one of my grandparents died when I was really young, so I don't really remember that. I recently had my wife's grandfather recently passed away, but I wasn't super close to him. It was sad because I watched people be sad, but I mean, ultimately it was empathetic because, you know, I just understand what that is like. So for me, I haven't really suffered all that much. There's one story that I think is probably the closest to something that would be considered suffering on my end, at least emotionally. I had a friend named Josh. Does anybody in here take martial arts? Anybody? Yeah. Okay, so So my friend took Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, and Capoeira. Yeah, he was nuts. So what he was able to do was basically, I baked with him at Tim Hortons. I was one of those baker who made donuts and all that. And we baked together on Saturday mornings. And I would just occasionally say, Josh, do a flip. And he's like, what kind of flip? I'm like, I don't know, a backflip and then a front flip. He's like, all right, whoop, whoop. And he'd be able to do it. Super good shape. He actually was going to be going into a fight because if he does all these things, he was going to be going into a fight, a mixed martial arts fight, sort of like you know, MMA, like UFC and things like that. But it was up in Canada, and he weighed, I think, 150 pounds, but there was a 140 limit or something, and he wanted to get in there. So he called off of work, wore a plastic bag suit, and covered it with like a sweatsuit, and carried two jugs of water, ran all week, ate nothing but yogurt and chicken and rice. And he lost the 10 pounds, went up to Canada, won, came back, slept for 2 days, and was back up and going again. So this guy was really like, he's like, life, heck yeah, I'm just going to beat the heck out of it. So he was at, he was on a date with his girlfriend Jen, my friend Jen. And they went to you guys know Grand Island? There's a beach on there called Beer Island. He was there with his girlfriend. He, you know, they they, I think, probably had, like, a picnic or something like that, and he had a kite, and I think it was one of those super awesome, like, stunt kites. You can make it do flips and things like that, and they had an awesome time, and Jen had to go to work at, I think, 2 o'clock or something, so she rollerbladed home, took a shower, went to work. Josh stayed there on the beach flying his kite, and he decided that he, you know, okay, I'm going to go home now, eat some dinner. So it was getting dark. He was driving home, and he had a stroke. Now, given how healthy Josh was, no one expected him to have a stroke. Nobody. Looking back on it now, it was in his family. But even that, like even his really like obnoxiously horrible diet or his gigantic family members, they didn't have these issues. But you'd think that they would have it first instead of Josh, who was extremely healthy. But what happened was he had a stroke while driving, and he was going on the highway leading up to it. It was about 45, 50 miles an hour on a curved road, and so he hit a tree. His car basically, for lack of a better word, hugged the tree, and it warped around it. And it's at Beaver Island, so like it's a super kind of remote part of Grand Island. And so I don't even know how long he was there, just like bleeding out and stuff. And it, somebody ended up calling it in, and he had one of those helicopters from Kenmore Mercy flew in. They used the jaws of life to get him out, flew him there, and he was in the hospital in a chemically induced coma for 3 months. When he emerged from it, nobody thought he did, but he was going to, or nobody thought he was going to, but he did. And when he emerged from it, he was a totally different person. Like, not just because of the accident, but because of, like, you know, it was a traumatic experience or whatever, but because it actually affected his brain. He had some swelling on his brain and things like that, and so when he came out, he was not the Josh I knew. And he started getting better. He still had the same appetite he did when he was working out every day, so he got fat. And it was depressing for him because he was so used to being able to do backflips and things like that. And so one day I got a call from Jen, and he had passed away in the middle of the night. And I was like, what the heck? You know, like, why not just take him then? Anyway, so a friend of mine named Cal, he is a pastor, and he was, going to Tim Hortons, which is where he worked. He was doing the overnight shift and talking to everybody who was there. Before Josh had passed away, the night before, Cal tells me that he's almost positive that he accepted Christ. This was something totally that would not have happened had he not been put on overnights. And he would not have been put on overnights had he not been in this chemically induced coma that caused a change. So ultimately, I don't know why this happened, but if the only way to get Josh to recognize that he was not invincible was to have him in a car accident and a chemically induced coma and then everything changes and then he realizes that Christ is here to save him, was it worth it? I mean, I get to see him forever, right? It's super sweet. There was a story that I heard. That's a side note. I'm not going to go there. So that's me and how the problem of pain affects me. At least it has. Everyone comes into the world with not a blank slate, but sort of like teachable, right? What we do is we will form a worldview, a picture of how the world works based on our culture, based on our family, based on what we perceive to be the truth and things like that. And so worldviews, the goal of worldviews are basically to present a perspective of the world that makes sense. And part of that making sense is to make sense of the problem of pain. We all recognize this as a reality, and if we didn't take it seriously, then no one would take that particular worldview seriously, right? Like if I were to just be like, pain's not real, which is actually Hinduism says, is that pain is not real. There are not very many people who subscribe to that because we all recognize that the existence of pain is actually a real thing. By the way, if you guys are taking notes and I move on too fast, just be like, and I'll go back. So, no, okay, good. So what a lot of people will do, skeptics of Christianity, things like that, will say that they'll present this argument that is supposed to be like the knockdown argument against God's existence or something like that. They'll say, if God is all-powerful, and if God is all-good, then why do I hurt? Now, on the face of it, that seems like a reasonable question, right? Like, if God's able to do anything and he loves us, what the heck? Why do things suck? Why do I hurt, right? There are a wide variety of approaches to this. A lot of you guys probably might be where I am now. I haven't really experienced any major pain lately, and any emotional pain, physical pain, things like that. I stubbed my toe a little while ago, but that's okay. So you may be where I am, and you're kind of processing this intellectually, sort of like a preventative maintenance kind of thing for when it were to happen, when something painful were to happen, you'd be able to kind of look back on this and be like, okay. Or perhaps you want to look at this for a perspective for your friend or something who's currently going through something. And still, other people may be, in fact, going through pain right now. Something happened that, I mean, obviously I don't know about because I don't know any of you guys. I've seen a couple of you guys at snow camp and things like that, but I don't even know if we've had conversations. So there might be something happening in your life that I don't know about, that maybe no one else here knows about, but that something that is in this solution to the problem of pain might help. So what I'm going to do is toss like a bunch up here, maybe like four or five, and I'm just going to be like, let's see which one works. But there's two different approaches here. There's a pastoral and an apologetic one. Pastoral is kind of like you're sitting next to somebody and spending time with them, right? Saying, I'm here for you. I know this stinks, but I'm here. I'm going to be with you throughout this. An apologetic one is sort of like you are, apologetics is the defense of the Christian faith, or the defense of a particular worldview. Christian apologetics is the Christian faith. And the apologetic one is to essentially say, here's the logical reasons behind it. Here's what makes sense rationally, theologically, whatever else. Here's why the Christianity makes the most sense. there are a bunch of other societies or cultures that will kind of try to answer this problem too. Like some Hindu or the Buddhist kind of approaches to this will kind of try to deny the existence of pain, or they'll say that the only reason pain exists is because we desire things. If we get rid of desires, then we can get rid of pain. It makes you kind of wonder if the desire to get rid of desires will ever go away, or if you're going to ever be stuck in desiring no desires. I don't know the answer. They probably have an answer to that. It's probably fairly straightforward, but that's just the thing that I don't know the answer to. Secular society, which is largely what we have. I think we've been described as having a post-Christian society. The meaning of life here for most people is just to kind of have a good life, right? To have a life where we have experienced the most pleasure possible and the least pain possible. So for them, pain just sort of gets in the way. And so in response to that, what we do is find an expert to get it, to push it away from us, right? An expert on, X, Y, or Z. If we're being affected by this, let's find an expert, and the expert will give me something to make it go away. And I think I'll get more into this, but that, I think, is an inappropriate response. I don't mean like inappropriate, like rated R or whatever, but inappropriate as in there's a more appropriate way to respond to these things. So what we're going to do here is look at Christianity and how Christianity being true. I mean, I'm not going to offer a full defense of the Christian faith at this point, but there are really good reasons to think that it's true, and I'm sure you've heard of them from other people. But I want to make sure that you guys know that simply denying the existence of God does not do anything to the problem of pain. It still is here. And as we were talking about earlier, even the problem of pain's existence itself, actually what we're going to talk about in a little bit is pain's existence, evil's existence, is actually a reason to think that God exists. We'll get into that. So what we want to do is look at Christianity. Like I was saying, Christianity offers a wide variety of solutions, and what I'm going to kind of do is toss up a bunch. None of these should be taken in isolation. They should be taken kind of all together to think, this forms a coherent picture of the world from a Christian perspective. And If one of them works for you today, awesome. If one of them works for you in 6 months when something really bad happens, that's even better, I think. Because right now, if you're just in processing this intellectually, that's good. But ultimately, if it helps get you through pain and suffering, that's ultimately the point, right? Okay, so the argument that I first presented, the one with, you know, if God is all-powerful and all-loving, why does pain exist? It dies what I have heard referred to as the death of 1,000 qualifications. And this makes you ask a couple of different questions. What does it mean for God to be omnipotent? Does it mean that God he can do anything? Is that what that means? What does it really mean for God to be omnibenevolent? It means he's all good, right? But, like, what does that really mean? And are we allowed to ask these questions? I think we are. And this is actually, I think, where theology gets to be fun, because you get to think about stuff in a fun way. Can I move on? Or are you still looking at that? Okay, 1 second. So what we're going to do is kind of look at these individual things here and see why the original argument against God's existence from pain, from evil, from suffering may not make as much sense or be as obvious as it originally was. This will be the topic of the next 2 slides, so I'm just going to go on to this one. Omnipotence, being all-powerful. What do you guys think? Do you think God can really do anything? Who thinks God can do anything? Who thinks there are certain limitations to things that God cannot do? Wow, this is actually the first class that had anybody raise their hand for that one.
I'm only raising my hand because I was in the air the first time.
Oh, so there's 2! See, this is how awesome this class is. Thanks, guys. Actually, even if it was accidental, this is flattering. So, the question, can God really do anything, might sound to you like something that we're not allowed to ask. You know what I mean? I don't know if you guys have grown up in the church, but there are certain things that you're just like, I don't think I'm allowed to ask that. But let's explore this. A square, right, is a shape with 4 equal sides and 4 90-degree angles. A circle has no sides. Well, it has sides, but not straight sides. Has no angles. Can God create a square circle? People are nodding their heads yes and shaking their heads no. Why do you think God can? Just because he can do anything, right? But if you think about it this way, how is it even possible for God to do it? Can God create the world and not create? Before he created the world, was it true that he did create and did not create? I think when we think about it like this, there are certain, I don't want to say limitations, but God's character does not violate the laws of logic, because the laws of logic are a part of who he is. So when I say that I'm married right now, I'm going to show you a picture of my baby in a little bit and use them as multiple examples, but I am not a bachelor. If you guys take an intro to philosophy class, which I actually minored in philosophy in school, this will be the, everyone will use this example as a married bachelor. You can't have that. As soon as you're married, you're no longer a bachelor. And as soon as you're a bachelor, when you are a bachelor, you are not married. You can't have a married bachelor. It doesn't make any sense. In the same way that you can't have a square circle, you can try to kind of maybe like bend it a little bit, but then it ends up being like a squircle. Squirtle, squirtle. So my point here is that there are certain limitations. There's some things that we should not expect God to be able to do. If God was totally able to do anything, even logically contradictory things, then he could just define evil as good. Right? And would that be okay? You can't just do that. But if he was able to be totally incoherent, he could just be incoherent, right? And he's saying that he's coherent at the same time. So I, for one, am glad that God is coherent and that he offers us real solutions to these things. The second one, does anybody have questions on that? I know that was kind of like I just lobbed a softball and it came down as a bowling ball or something, but by the way, if you guys have questions, feel free to raise your hand. I'm not going to I'm not going to say no to questions, but I might finish my thought and then come to you. All right, so next one. What does it mean for God to be all good? Is removing the pain of others always the loving thing to do? Shaking your head vigorously, no. So much so that your hair went like this, and that's exciting because I used to have long hair. I'm growing it out again. Anyway, so I don't think this is the case, and he doesn't either, and I don't think you guys should think this is the case, that any time that pain exists, we should automatically remove it from people. So my baby, his name is Micah. His full name is Micah Owen Ravi Thompson, M-O-R-T, Mort. That's fun. So it's Mort. Little did I know is that Mort is actually like a prefix for like death. We'll talk about like mortuaries and things like that. That's not why I did it. But so I just like those names. Anyway, so he's at the point right now, he's 9 months old, where he can crawl over to something, right? And he'll climb up onto where he is, and then he'll do this. And he's like, he really wants to walk, right? And he'll reach out for VeggieTales or whatever's on TV, and he'll let go, and then immediately, boom, right on his butt. However, about maybe 2 weeks ago, it would have been reaching out, wants to get VeggieTales or the cat's tail or whatever, and then thanks. And it was not easy for me to just let him fall on his face. I mean, I tried to catch him every time, and not like that. But he would fall on his face, and he would be hurt, right? My wife picked him up one time and was like, oh, no, you're fine, after he just got a solid right on the ground. Boom. Face, nose. Like, you know the feeling that you get when you hit your nose? And it's like when you snort, like, water. And you're like, oh, it's horrible. He had that, I think, because he just went face down. And I thought, I'm like, actually, he's not okay. This is probably the worst pain he's felt since childbirth. But, I mean, he's little, right? And so falling down doesn't hurt as much as it would if he started off 6'1", 230 pounds, and boom, that hurts a lot. That's actually why I stopped snowboarding. Because when I was small, it didn't hurt as much to fall down. Now it hurts a lot. So I think we can at least see that removing the pain of loved ones is not always the best thing to do. And I think there's reason to think that God he allows us to have these painful situations for a better purpose. But we'll get into that a little bit. So like I was saying, the original argument, if God is all-powerful and he's all-loving, why does pain exist? It's more complicated than a lot of people give it credit for. And I think properly looking at these things makes it so that the argument in and of itself doesn't actually go through. So, I mean, ultimately, I don't think that's a very good argument. The next thing, you need me to go back? Some people still writing. Yeah, all right. You go, eh, that's what you got to do. So, ultimately, what we have to do is we have to take our perspective, our worldview, our philosophical picture, and offer a solution to these things. A solution that makes sense and is coherent within our worldview. And that is called, I'm moving on either way, is called a theodicy, because I have to put the cool word up here. Theo means God, and dissy means something else. I don't know what the dissy means. So the question, why does God permit evil, pain, and suffering, is ultimately a question that if we answer it, we are providing what's called a theodicy. And so what we're going to go through here is a couple of theodicies that Christianity offers. And what I want to make sure you guys know this at this point, because I'm not going to be citing scripture here. That's not because I can't, but it's because you guys know what hermeneutics is? The study of scripture, the study of a book, but in this case, it would be the study of scripture. Anytime I want to cite a verse, I always feel the need to give you context. And like, if I'm citing a verse in like Corinthians, I want to tell you about the church at Corinth and why Paul is talking about this, and I just would get distracted. So I'm going to just assure you that all of these things are grounded in biblical principles. A biblical or Christian worldview is where I'm getting these answers from. But I'm not pointing out particular Bible verses because it would just distract me. And ultimately, like, this is what happens if you study the Bible, and it kind of emerges. This kind of worldview emerges. So we're going to look at the big picture of Christianity and think, how does it answer these questions? Imagine, for a second, a alien civilization. For you in the corner who was here the first time, I didn't bring this up the first time. Second time, they really got a kick out of it. Yes, he's getting better. First one was a trial run. So imagine if you are an alien on your spaceship, and for some reason you got a single transmission from one hospital, right? And it's an inappropriately placed camera in a birthing room. And all you saw was a woman who was obviously very uncomfortable coming in, and she's in pain, and then they give her shots, and things are hooked up to her, and she's obviously in pain, and the father's like, what do I do? What do I do? I can't do anything. And then she's squeezing his hand, and he's like, ah, this sucks. And what she's in pain, she can't do anything, and then the doctors bring other doctors in, and they cut her open, and blood's everywhere, and this baby comes out, and it's like limp. Let's say the baby's limp, and the doctor like does whatever, spanks it on the butt or something, and then it starts to cry, and like there's just blood and guts everywhere. And then the alien is like, ew, and shuts the laptop. If that was all this alien got of Christianity, or not Christianity, but of humanity, you would say he's got kind of a bit of a skewed version of what human life is. Why doesn't he come back when like we're all having a party and we're all children laughing on a playground, things like that? So by analogy, I think there's a good reason to think that we have a limited perspective on the world. Obviously, we're not just seeing childbirth, but we have a limited perspective because we are one person in the world trying to see it the best we can. But ultimately, we don't have the whole picture just by looking at it. What we have to do is kind of develop that big picture. So that's what I want to do here with a coherent picture of the world from a Christian view. So what possible solutions are there to the problem of pain, problem of evil, things like that? I'm going to first present two what I call easy solutions. They're not really easy. They're just, they're kind of, so for martial arts guy, you know Aikido? It's a martial art that, for everybody else, it's like if someone were to attack you with like a knife or something, they would come in and then you would kind of go like this and twist around and then they would fall down. It's not an attack. It's like a defensive thing where you just flip them over and they just are kind of incapacitated. I took Aikido for about 5 months and I thought it was super cool. But this is sort of like that when it comes to the problem of pain. Because it's not an answer, but it's a counterattack, I guess. Ultimately, this argument, what it does is it goes to show that if evil exists, God exists. It's called the moral argument for God's existence. First premise is if God does not exist, objective moral values and duties do not exist. We can kind of see this, that if there was just a blip in the quantum field and that created the universe, and then a long time later there was an accident of chemistry which created life, and then a bunch of accidents basically led to us, there's no ultimate foundation for moral values, like a real moral values, things that are really good and really bad. Not really, really, but like objectively good and objectively bad. If we were to... I'm not going to talk about that. So I think in the second thing here is objective moral values and duties really do exist. We know that they do. A lot of times people kind of try to subjectivize certain things, but there are things that are really bad. When Hitler killed all those people, that was actually bad. It wasn't like just the society thought, well, we don't really think that that's a good idea. Meh. It was actually bad, really bad stuff that he did. When he was on trial, or when the Nazis were on trial for what they had done, their defense, one of their defenses was that it was right within the culture of the Germans, Nazi culture at least. And the judge who was residing over the thing said, that's not going to work here. There is a law above the law, something that says that, no, you are actually wrong, really objectively wrong. And so I think when you combine these two, and if they're actually true, the conclusion is, therefore, God exists. So if someone complains about evil, and they're saying that evil is real, then what they're saying is that evil is a real thing, And that means that good is a real thing, because evil is like the absence of good. And if that's the case, then they have to say that God exists, because it just follows from the premises. It's logical and it makes sense. If they deny that evil exists and they still want to complain about pain and suffering, I mean, okay, what are you complaining about? Because it's not real. So either way, they're either forced to deny evil, which is what they're complaining about, or they're forced to embrace God's existence. Like I said, that's not really it's a response, but it's sort of like a judo kind of response. The second one, another quote-unquote easy solution, is something, I like the name of it, it's called skeptical theism. Sounds super edgy, because it's skeptics. I'll just read this quote, which I have a typo right here. That's the word in, that's what it's supposed to be. The quote is, "Why is it that we finite, self-serving, time-constrained, so often wrong human beings think that we have all the wisdom needed in which to castigate God and hold him before the bar of our wisdom within our timetable?" So he's essentially asking the question, we are finite, and we have a very limited perspective. Why is it that we should expect to know the answer in every case of why God does something? I'm going to use another martial arts analogy, because apparently these work for the problem of pain. Because getting punched hurts, I guess. So imagine if you walk by a parking lot, right? And you saw these two fifth graders beating the snot out of each other. What would you do? Separate them, right? You'd be like, what the heck, guys? No, no, no. Stop it. Now, what if you knew that they were friends? Would it change anything? No. You'd probably be like, well, you're friends. Come on. Stop beating each other up. What if you knew that they were friends? They were in the same martial arts class. Somebody was watching them from inside a building because he was cold or something. And they're training for a martial arts bout on Saturday. Would that change what you're doing? Yes. Right. It would. So your knowledge of the situation changes how you respond to something. Now imagine for a moment if you have all knowledge. That would probably change a lot of things on how you would respond to certain things, especially if you knew all possible true propositions of the future, which, for those of you theological nerds, that's because I'm a Molinist. Anyway, so you probably don't even know if anybody got that. So my question is, for the original, if God is all-powerful and all-powerful and all-good, how does adding things like an actual understanding of all things change how you would expect God to act? What about being all-wise? What about being eternal? Now, you may not think being eternal will be all that different, but on the scale of eternity, from here to eternity, which never ends, this little blip of our existence isn't that much. But for us, it's all that there is. Well, not all that there is for those who are going to live eternally, but from our perspective, it seems like that's all it is. So skeptical theism is basically the response by saying, I don't know the answer to it, nor should I expect to know. So again, it's sort of like an easy response in that it's sort of just this is how things are. I don't know what else you want. I'm going to get now into the actual kind of real responses. The first one, what time is this one over? Session 3 o'clock? No, 2:20. Third workshop ends at 2:20. Okay, good. Okay, so the first response is what this one philosopher named Alvin Plantinga. He has dubbed the free will defense. Now, what I've just done is taken a drink out of this water bottle. Why do you think I took it out of this one instead of this one, other than it being a part of my analogy?
Maybe somebody else drank out of the...
Maybe somebody else did that, but I did, actually. So we have the ability to make choices, right? I chose to drink out of this water bottle instead of this water bottle. There are other things that influence our choices and things like that, but we actually do have real choices. At least that's the claim of Alvin Plantinga, and I think he's got a point. God gave us the ability to make choices, and without the ability to make choices, we wouldn't have ever chosen bad. But at the same time, if we can't make choices, are our choices actually, are, Are the behaviors that we do actually good? When you see a, like a robot, I don't know, robots, I mean, okay, who's played The Sims? All right, so in The Sims, are The Sims, when you put them on free mode, is that what it is, free range or whatever? Free range. When they just do whatever, when you're not dragging them to places, they're just doing stuff, right? And then, they put their baby in the microwave or whatever they do. They're just doing stuff that they're programmed to do. Now, granting that it's a computer game, if it was in real life and you're just programmed to do stuff, how can we meaningfully call what they're doing good or bad? If this computer program was programmed to put another computer program, their baby, in the microwave, it's not actually bad. It's amusing because it's not bad. It's not good either. It's just whatever. It might be bad if it influences you to put a baby in the microwave. Don't put a baby in the microwave. But so that's what Alvin Plantinga is essentially not. I mean, there's much more complicated. He's a professional philosopher, so he has a lot of big words and a lot of logic. But his point is that if we have real things that we are really able to choose, then that means that we can choose good and choose evil. God gave us the ability to choose things, so therefore some of us choose evil. And ultimately, if somebody did something bad to you, I don't really understand why if somebody, you know, the bully in school did something bad to me, therefore I'm going to blame God. I don't really understand why somebody would do that. Next one, I just have a question. I think I've kind of touched on this, is what would a world free of pain look like? That would probably have robots, maybe just a bunch of rocks, maybe super cool rocks because there's pressure in the Earth's mantle and it makes diamonds or something, but it's still just a bunch of rocks not actually making choices, robots that are just programmed to do whatever. There is a disease called SEPA. Have you guys heard of this? It's a disease where it's a neurological thing where you're not able to feel pain. And there was a story I heard, maybe I just made it up. I don't think I made it up. Of this girl who has SEPA. She was watching her mother cook and she leans on the stove. The stove was cooking things. Her flesh melted off and onto the stove. Had she been able to feel pain, my guess is that a little bit before she touched the fire, it probably would have signaled her to, no, don't do that. I have a funny example of this. There's a cinder block, two cinder blocks that we had in a fire when I was younger. The fire had already gone out, but the cinder blocks retained heat for quite some time. Me, being, I don't know, 14 or something, was like, hey, I'm going to pick these up. And I picked them up, squeezed them. And I'm like, hey, what the... And I legitimately... You know, remember in Men in Black? Have you guys seen the movie Men in Black? And when he's like... they burn his fingertips off. It's like... It was like that. But it burned basically everything off. I mean, it wasn't like down to the bone or anything. But I legitimately... I stayed home from school for the next 2 days with my hands both in ice buckets. I couldn't feel my hands. But that's why pain is good. At least in this case. Because it ultimately leads you to recognize when things are bad, right? What kind of things you have to stay away from. What kind of things... I learned from that. I haven't grabbed a cinder block since, even if it's not near a fire. I'm scared of the things. So the point here is that the inability to feel pain does not mean that the person or the body cannot be wounded, right? So a world without pain would still have wounds. The one girl that had SEPA, I think it was probably the same thing. Maybe it was on Netflix or something. But she was, she had an infection because she stepped on something. And she didn't know because it was on the bottom of her foot. And the infection almost made it so that her foot had to be amputated. But she just didn't know. And now every single day, like 3 or 4 times a day, she checks out her entire body. She goes into a stall and just completely gets naked. And is like, well, okay, let's see if there's anything wrong today. That would be horrible. I don't want to do that. I like that I can feel pain sometimes, right? It identifies when things are bad. Pain serves a purpose. this is a soul-making theodicy, is the idea that... How much time do we have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay, cool. I'm going to shut those doors. The soul-making theodicy is the idea that we have the ability to... our character is finally tuned by pain, right? Purpose of spiritual growth. Here's a picture of my baby.
Oh, that's adorable.
One time he was standing up. This is in the middle of his faceplant stage. My wife wasn't in the room because she probably would have yelled at me. And if this is going to go up on the podcast, sorry, Beth, if you're listening to this. So what I did is I pushed him kind of like here, and it caused his butt to go out, and I pushed him down. Now, if I were to tell you that I just pushed my child over, and he's 6 months or 7 months old, you'd be like, what the? Are you evil? No, because this is a perfect opportunity, because I tossed a pillow underneath him and I pushed him over so that he could get the feeling of going down butt first, so that he knew that that did not hurt. I put the pillow there so that he, in case he was like, and just decided to go this way and then face again, I didn't want to be fully responsible for that. But so the soul making theodicy is the idea that we go through certain things to become better people. Micah went through me pushing him over so that he knew that going down onto his pee and poop-filled diaper was more comfortable than flopping onto his face. The second last point that I want to make is that God chose you. This is a relatively new idea that I was only introduced to because I started studying this topic, which, I mean, this topic is probably one of the weirdest topics for me because I don't really tend to see myself as an emotional person, but as you could tell by earlier, this kind of tends to bring stuff out that I didn't know I had. And so it actually makes worship more meaningful. And it was weird because I used to sing songs just kind of recognizing the truth of theology in this song, but now it actually like, ooh, I'm getting old probably. That's what that means, right? When you get emotional. So the point here is that God chose you. He didn't choose you in a less painful existence, which we can't imagine. He didn't choose you in a more painful existence, which we can also imagine. He chose you as you are. He chose you. And it's really cool to think about this, because if we were in a world where there was less pain, let's imagine... Okay, so I'm going to tell you the story of how I came to be. Not the details, but how I came to be. My mom was somewhat of a hippie living in Buffalo. My dad was a guy from Massachusetts who, in Boston, he wanted to get away from stuff. And basically what happened was they both recognized that stuff kind of stunk in their life and they wanted out. So they drove or whatever, to... Arizona. My mom, driving down there in her Firebird, thought that it would be a good idea to go down this one road, or for whatever reason, she hit a curb and bent a wheel axle right outside of a garage. This garage happened to be my dad worked there. So my dad fixed the wheel axle. They got into a conversation, and here I am. So without getting into too much of that. But imagine a world with less pain. Now, bending a wheel axle, maybe $100 or something like that, not really that big of a deal. Could God have gotten rid of that? Yeah. With virtually changing nothing, or so we think. If my mom had not bent that wheel axle right there, and the garage was right there, I wouldn't be here. Now, just imagine the kind of things that had to have happened to get you here. That is the kind of thing that God orchestrated so that he could have you. Not a you in a different world, because a you in a different world would not be you. You might have the same hairstyle, might have the same stuff, but it wouldn't be the same person, because we are ultimately shaped by our experiences. Even just imagine, like, we live in the United States. The founding fathers came here because stuff sucked in England, right? They just wanted out. And they wanted to create something new. And so that, even the choice of that handful of people, well, large handful of people, big hand, God's handful of people, made it so that we all were able to be here because God orchestrated that. All right, so the 220. All right, so I got 5 minutes. And the last point that I guess I want to make is God did, okay, so God died on the cross. We all know this, right? Now imagine another thought experiment. Imagine we're on a sinking ship, and this sinking ship is going down, and you're like, crap, gotta get out. So you're running from the where it's sinking up, kind of, because it's going down, right? And then you look in this room, and there's a baby, a toddler perhaps, cannot get out. You can get in, but if you get in because of the way the ship is sunk, you know, tipped over or whatever, you can get in, but there's no way to get out. You would probably look at this baby and be like, ooh, I want to help you, but I can't. I don't have the ability to do that. Now imagine if it was your baby. I don't think I could just let him die. Dang it. Okay, so what God did, he came here to suffer with us. Don't mind me. He came here to suffer with us, for us, and ultimately die for us. And I think if we are unable to do that, or unwilling to do that for some random kid, and I don't think I probably would if I didn't know the kid, imagine how God views us to have to have done that. Okay, I think I'm good. All right, on that note, anybody have any questions? I see, this is what happens when you study the problem of pain for 2 months straight. It starts to affect you in some stupid ways that make me feel like a little baby. Anyway, anybody have any questions? We got 2:20. We got like 3 minutes. If not, get the heck out of here. Thanks, guys.
Well, podcast listeners, we're at the end of another episode, episode 4 of the Live Christianly podcast. And Elijah and I just really want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to what we do. Both of us are very passionate about what we talk about and bring up on the podcast and about our faith. And it's really awesome that you care about that enough to download the podcast or stream it. Reminder, you can find us on iTunes to download it or via your favorite podcatcher app. You can also stream us on Stitcher. We're available on YouTube as well. We have, if you just search for Live Christianly Podcast, you'll find our channel you can subscribe to there. And each time we come up with a new episode, it'll be available there as well for you to stream. Additionally, you can always find Live Christianly on Twitter, @LiveChristianly, and Elijah and my personal Twitter accounts are linked to that, too, if you'd like to connect with us. And Facebook.com/LiveChristianly is where you can find us there, too. If you do like what we do, we'd be super humbled and obliged if you'd be willing to share our Facebook page, like our Facebook page, you know, share when new episodes come out on Twitter. Share by word of mouth. I had a buddy tell me this last week that he'd been telling some people about our podcast. And so we really appreciate it. We love what we do, and we certainly want to share it with others. And just Elijah and I were talking this week. We wanted to give a shout-out to Jerome. Jerome's been interacting a lot with Elijah and I personally and with the Live Christianly account on Twitter. One of many people, so I don't want to certainly single him out as the only one. But Jerome's been a super encouragement to us, and just within the last few weeks especially brought a couple different topics that Elijah and I are hopefully going to bring up on the, you know, the next few episodes of our podcast here, or sometime in the future. But some good content suggestions. Reminder, if you guys have those, absolutely reach out to us. If you you can share it to our Facebook page once you like that. And you can also certainly share it to our Twitter account. Just make sure you link to @LiveChristianly, or you can do #LCPod. That's a hashtag that we use for linking to content. So either way is cool. But just wanted to thank you guys again. We really appreciate it. Glad you could join us for this special edition of Episode 4 of the Live Christianly Podcast, and we'll see you next time for Episode 5. Oh, yeah.